Hello. Welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG/schedule. Please do leave a review, and we look forward to adventuring together.
All right, I hope you're all suitably girded. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Together. Thank you for joining us for a live evening of talking about Dungeons & Dragons. What on earth could go wrong? We will find out over the course of the next hour. I am, once again, your host, David Shears, and I am joined by the lovely Emma Sheard.
Hello.
The similarity of our names, purely coincidental. You can see Emma here, and we will be going through some enticing questions and adventurous anecdotes. What questions you ask? Well, the dice decide, but also, as a twist for this evening's entertainment, we will be taking some questions from the audience. So chat, do please have your questions prepared, and we will queue up as many as we can to get through. Emma, presumably everybody who is familiar with Roll Together will know something of you at this stage, but for those who may be new or for those who may be slightly forgetful, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm definitely with those who are slightly forgetful. Hi, I'm Emma. I use pronouns M or Emma. Gosh, so I've been playing with Roll Together since Roll Together started, and before that with Adventures Wanted for quite some time. I am a massive D&D nerd. I play a lot at home as well. I DM as well as play. You might have seen a couple of my DM campaigns at this point, which was Legend of the Underworld and the second one, whose name I have temporarily forgotten. But you were in it, David. So you should remember.
Yes. I should remember.
Falling Waterdeep, there we go.
Yeah. There were sausages. That's where the sausage roll legend began.
Sausages, so that's what's important here. I live in London with Chris, who I am in a relationship with. That was very formal.
Yeah, no, it's a... We've got to respect this BBC-like format, right? Let's stick to the formalities. Cup of tea, Robert's your father's brother, bacon sandwich, all of that stuff.
I am originally from the north of England, which we were having a chat about this in the run-up to us going live, is probably why our surnames are so similar, because you're also from the north.
Also true, yeah. Very, very strong agricultural tradition. So that is something of Emma. We are about to find out more. Before we kick off, this stream will run for an hour, more or less. I mean, there's a bit of leeway either way. If we're in the middle of an interesting question, we probably won't cut off in the middle of it. But we are delighted to be sponsored by Hero Forge, Ultra Pro, and Elderwood Academy, and supported by D&D Beyond, Warriors of Waterdeep, and Level Up Dice. We are, as ever, Roll Together RPG on all social media, and a massive thank you shout out to our D20 Club on Patreon. Check it out if that's something that might interest you. Our shows are available as podcasts. Just search Roll Together RPG on your favorite podcasting app. So, without further ado, we will follow the format that is now legendary, where, grammatically or not, I don't care, we say, roll that dice. And as we see it wend its way across the screen, what will it be? It's a 9! A 9! And the 9 means I ask you this, Emma, and only this. What would you say to a new player, someone who's new to TTRPGs or D&D even?
Oh, just do it.
Yes!
Find someone who is knowledgeable about playing, who wants to DM you, get their advice on making a character, make a character, put your own ideas in there as well. You're going to end up making something that's very similar to you, probably, or like wish fulfillment. I think that's probably where everyone starts. And just go for it. Like, find a group of friends, find a group of people that you're really like comfortable in, and just do it, because like it's fun and you can't know until you've tried it. And you know what? If you try it and it's not for you, that's fine as well. But if you don't try it, how can you possibly know? Yeah,
absolutely. I'd say to people as well, like, if you try it the first time and you don't necessarily enjoy it, it might not be that it's not for you. It might just be that it, you know, you're playing with people who are looking for different things out of the game, or perhaps the DM isn't as used to bringing new players into it. So it's worth it. You know, the first time doesn't always count.
Yeah, absolutely. You might end up in a group who really enjoy playing in a very kind of maps way. So you might, my first DM, who I still play with, and he's fantastic, he absolutely adores playing with maps and minis and like working out exactly the increments of everything, and I DM him now. I don't DM in that way. I DM through Theatre of the Mind. But when I DM him, I have to be really clear about where everything is in a room when I am describing combat, because his brain works like that. He needs to know where everything is so that he can make clever choices about spells. If you end up in a group like that and you're there with a map going, this is not my thing, just try a different style. So, like, obviously you can find groups that are very roleplay heavy, which is an entirely different style of play, and there are groups that mix the two, and it's, you know, it's very dependent on the people you're playing with. And you can be in a group where you're having a fantastic time and then someone comes in who just kind of changes the dynamic, and that changes the dynamic and you need to change groups. So it's an incredibly people-oriented hobby, which is one of its real strengths. But what that does mean is that you need to be with the right group of people. So
absolutely,
you need to find them.
Do you remember how you felt when you first started playing?
I had a fantastic time. So I was playing with Seb, who DM'd me for the first time, and he is really supportive. He's a fantastic DM, and he kind of explained everything to me. And I was playing a rogue, which is one of the more straightforward classes to start with, although it still has some complicated mechanics. And I had a kind of like one of your classic tragic backstory. I was a half elf.
This is mandatory, right? Mandatory.
Human mother, elf father, tragedy, you know, classic. And you know, we had a great time, but things have progressed since then. That must have been about 3 years ago now. I really enjoyed it, but you know.
Fantastic. Well, you too can enjoy it. Well, if you're waiting to take the plunge, now could be the time. Get together with some friends, find somebody to DM. I'll be honest, if you're the one driving it, it'll probably be you, but still, it's a great time all around. Noelle, shall we embrace the novelty of this new live format and take a question from chat?
Yes.
So this question is from Troutworthy, a long-time
friend. Hi, Troutworthy.
And follower of the channel. Great to hear from you. And the question is, and I honestly, when I saw this, I had to try and stop myself from laughing, because you'll understand. Where does the love for paladins come from?
Okay, so I hadn't played a paladin until I played Prosperous, who was my character in originally Corrupted and then transferred into Sea of Swords Forsaken. And it's just fantastic. For me, I really enjoyed it. Like, you can kind of do everything. Like, you can stand at the front, you can make big hits because you can use Divine Smites to do, like, really big burst damage. You can do clever things with your spells, especially for me being a Devotion Paladin, you get access to Sanctuary, which you can do really interesting things with when you're thinking about it, which I'm not always thinking about it, but sometimes I am. You can heal in really big doses. Like, paladins get lay on hands, so you have access to, at that sort of level, we're talking like 9 up to 12, I think we ended Sea of Swords on. We're talking like 45 to 55 hit points that you can just, I mean, in one turn you can give someone 50 hit points, which is
big
ridiculous.
Difference yeah.
I mean, if you don't want to Divine Smite, which is always a trade-off. And you can also literally just stand at the front and soak up damage. And because Prosperous in particular is a half-orc, and this happened once in Corrupted, half-orcs, when you knock them down to 0 hit points, once per long rest, they come back with 1 hit point. So, I mean, even harder to kill than most other species. So that particular... Also, Prosperous is a Devotion Paladin, which means that their Channel Divinity, P's Channel Divinity, gives them a plus 10 to hit. So it's just like that particular combination is just particularly nasty for any DM to try and put things against. Like, Prosperous is incredibly hard to kill, hits almost every time, and can also heal in massive amounts when I choose to instead of hitting. And by the time you're at level 9, you have enough spell slots that realistically in most combats you're going to be able to Divine Smite every hit if you want to. So, that's a lot of fun to play because you can do everything. However, the challenge of playing a paladin is you need them to have some sort of weakness, or you need to find other things for them to do, or other things that they're bad at, because that means that they cover a lot of things that other people in the party also want to do. So you need to find ways for them to mesh with the party so that it doesn't feel like they're kind of filling lots of different roles. So, yeah, that's why I love them. But there are challenges that come along with that, which is trying to find ways for them to fit into parties that doesn't feel like they're stealing other people's thunder or, filling things that other people can do. And sometimes what that means is that when you see something that you want to do, you have to step back and go, actually, like, let someone else do it. And I think that's a really interesting trade-off, and I enjoy that as well. So that, I think that is what I enjoy the most. I think also, for me, there is something in all of my characters across the board. You'll notice this if you've been watching Trix as well. Mm. They're all looking for something. Like, I have this joke that all of my characters are shouting into the void and waiting for the void to answer back. And it's true. And I'm not religious personally, but all of my characters are looking for something, and D&D is a way for them to find answers. So warlocks, paladins, clerics, I haven't played druids yet, but those classes are ways to explore that side of things that I find really particularly interesting. Mm. So that is why.
That's really interesting to me. Like, my answer would have been far more succinct. I like to hit things and feel good about it. But yeah, it's this idea of the shouting into the void. I hadn't previously noticed that, but now that you said it, looking at characters that I've seen you play, I can see it. It reminds me of that the sort of concept in Terry Pratchett's Small Gods, that gods are ideas made flesh. It's like, yeah, that sort of quest from the inner soul. That's really interesting. I look at tea in a whole different way.
It's pretty much. I have it in my DMing as well. Not so much in Windfall, but I mean, I suppose you could even see it in Windfall with the fact that the whole thing was designed by a fae patron. But in Legends of the Underworld, like the whole exploration of the underworld, and two of my home campaigns have been entirely about exploring theology. Like, there is this theme running through all of my personal exploration through D&D, which is mostly about explorations of what I think about death and what happens beyond death, and what I think of gods and religion and what that connection looks like for me. Even though I don't really feel like I have that personally. So yeah, interesting.
Fantastic. Well, let us roll the dice once more and see what they have for us. It wends its way across the screen into my mind and into my dreams. It is an 11, and I promise you, I won't do any more poetry.
As I would say to George, distinctly average.
Yeah. I mean, average is good though if it's George, so I'll take that as a compliment. So 11 means, and interesting, this will build off of the back of what we were just talking about. What is your favourite, or whom rather, is your favourite character?
That's really tough.
Yeah.
That's so hard.
I was happy that came up. I was like, interesting.
Despite how much I love Trix, and I do, I adore Trix, it is still Prosperous. I love Prosperous. I think possibly because I'm not playing Prosperous at the moment, and maybe if I was playing Prosperous and not playing Trix, the answer would be Trix. But I love Prosperous. Mechanically, everything about Prosperous works. Like, as I was just describing, kind of everything in that is kind of perfectly enmeshed into kind of how I would like it to be in a character. Chris and I were talking about making a new paladin. I was like, well, I could just make a new devotion paladin because it's everything I want. It's like, maybe I should not do that again. The kind of the backstory that I gave Prosperous about Golden Fields and the family and this kind of corrupt leader of the, well, not necessarily corrupt, but misguided leader of the Holy Order of the kind of Chauntean paladins, which we haven't really explored yet in any detail. Mm. So hopefully that will kind of happen at some point. And their previous partner, Edie, and then we saw the whole story play out and Corrupted with their kind of partner of the time where they gave away the scythe, and that was just kind of, it just kind of hit the mark. Everything on that kind of played out perfectly in stream, and Like, not in terms of, like, I had planned all that and it played out perfectly. It was just, like, in-stream everything happened and it just, it felt really real. Mm. And it's really nice when those things come together and you're telling a story with other people and the pieces kind of all start to mesh and feel...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And feel right. And then we kind of went on this kind of jaunt across the sea in Sea of Swords, which was just really good fun. And kind of hilarity ensued and making choices to go and break into prisons, which is absolutely against sort of everything that P stands for. And yet it was the right thing to do. And those are kind of interesting character moments where you make choices that you wouldn't necessarily... If you said to me in Corrupted, do you think Prosperous would go and break into prison and be like, no, never, why? And yet, like, in the moment, you make those choices. And making the choice at the end of Sea of Swords to... can I spoil the end of Sea of Swords? Is that all right? It's been 6 months.
You haven't seen it by now. I mean, yeah.
Making the choice at the end of Sea of Swords to kill Anton rather than let Anton destroy the world. Despite the fact that Anton had up until that point been a very close friend, like, those are the kind of things that, you know, make a character. Yeah. And having those characters come back over time really builds that story. Mm. And we've seen Prosperous twice now, whereas Trix we've only seen, obviously, for kind of eight weeks up to this point. So you build those storylines.
That is something that I've loved from what Roll Together's been doing in terms of having characters return, but having them be changed by the experiences that have taken place whilst they've been away, and finding ways to weave that into the story. I mean, Prosperous, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, I hope I am. Prosperous, there we go. Story arc was absolutely phenomenal. That was as part of the collective whole as well. And like you say, these changes were made that one wouldn't expect on first viewing, but when the decisions were made, you could see the rationale behind it and you could see why it worked in story terms. I mean, that's, I think it's fair to say Prosperous is a fan favorite, because we see P referenced very, very, very often. I'll resist the urge to say, are you disappointed whenever you roll damage in double figures rather than triple?
No, I mean... I mean, Divine Smite is amazing, and being able to, like, stack smites and Divine Smites, and, you know, when you get to the point where you can be like, I'm gonna bonus action smite and then I'm gonna roll two smites as well, that is fun. But there are things about Eldritch Smite which you can't get with Divine Smite, and there are things about different characters, like, for example, Trix being able to contact other plane, like, you cannot do that as a paladin, like, that's just not available to you. Like, there are things you can do as a warlock that are not possible for other classes, so having that separation is interesting and different and makes for an interesting makes it able to make interesting choices. And I also really enjoy being able to use spells to facilitate other people, like using Dream in the campaign we're currently doing, his name I've temporarily
Gloom
forgotten.
Falls on Baldur's Thank you. Gate. Monday nights, everybody. Monday nights.
To be able to facilitate like the scene that Rebecca did with her sister, and the scene that Evie did, where Silver went into the big bad's dreams and just, I mean, Evie narrated something absolutely incredible. I could never have done that.
Yeah.
But to help facilitate that is amazing, and I really enjoy that side of things.
Absolutely. The way that this group kind of builds off each other, and there's so much of really good yes anding going on, and I you know, it's honestly a pleasure to be there. I come away from the sessions often, you know, drained, but also like really, really happy to be playing with this group of people.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask you a question from chat, because that builds on quite neatly onto the question of, well, who's your favorite PC. So Awesome Jambo has asked, since Emma's now run a few campaigns on the channel, I'd be quite interested to know Em's favorite NPC that they created or are RP'd in game.
I would be very surprised if people have not already guessed that it is indeed Willy the Sausage King.
The Sausage King, yes! Yes!
So, someone saw through me in the very first session of Windfall in Waterdeep and spotted that I had nicked the name Willy the Sausage King from Lucifer, which I was like, It's in the fourth season of Lucifer. It's in one episode where they go to and like a back in history, no one's ever going to spot that I've nicked the name from Lucifer. And then, of course, immediately I say it and someone's like, is that a Lucifer reference? It's like, oh, God.
That seems really familiar, detective.
Yeah. But I built this foppish minotaur, kind of not a crime lord in any way, not smart, just like kind of a sweet character who has a lot of money. They've come about by maybe suspicious means. It was never clarified. That has just used it to build an empire of sausages in Waterdeep and is using some of it to fund the arts. And every interaction that I had with mostly Hannah was just really good fun. I had a great time. I really enjoyed describing Willy. I just had a great time. And I will say that one thing the Windfall and Waterdeep cast really took and ran with was, I was like, we have session zero. So in the session zero, I was like, look, there is going to be this person who is funding the theatre. He has a sausage empire. Probably the theatre is funded from this sausage empire. And the cast were like, great, we'll change the names of shows to have sausage puns in the title. And we'll have like sausage merchandise and there'll be sausages at the interval. Like, none of that came from me. That was from the session zero, from the cast of the show. And over the next week, as we ran up to our first recording, people were sending me names of shows, real shows with sausage puns in the titles.
It just took off. It became its own meme, right? That's how you know you've made it.
it was great. So, yes, that is my on stream my favorite NPC, hands down.
I feel like Roll Together should have a subreddit just dedicated to Sausage King memes. Although I see that might not be a good idea. So perhaps that's one to leave on the drawing board. But hey, yeah. Who knows? Oh, brilliant! I loved Willy. Suspicious cursed bags of gold of origins and so on. I'm just working my way through Lucifer now, so I'll be looking out for that reference. I just finished season two, and absolutely
enjoy
love it
when you get there.
Great flipping soundtrack, I must say. So, once again, let's embrace the fact that we are live and questions are coming through from chat. So, Pixie, another long-time friend of the channel, and great to see the contribution, asks, does D&D sneak into aspects of Emma's real life? And if so, are there any fun examples?
The best one I have is that Ultra Pro gave us these folders with like D&D designs on them. They're like plastic wallets. And I was using one of them to keep my university notes in because I'm doing a part-time degree. And I had it on my desk at work. I work at three different sites. So I just had it on my desk at one of the sites I'm not normally at. And one of the security guards was coming around and he saw it and he was like, oh, do you play D&D? Like, yeah, I'm a streamer, like I stream D&D. He's like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I do D&D art.
Oh, wow.
And we just got chatting about it, and he kind of showed me his website, and we just had this conversation about it. But it was through kind of having this folder with it's very distinctive art. I don't have one currently to hand to show you, but they are, they're very bold. Kind of people beheading each other and wizards doing things. And,
your allegiance is clear, right?
I mean, I use them for all sorts. Like, I have my sewing patterns in one of them. Like, they're all over our house at this point. He just saw it and just asked me about it, and that was really nice. But I mean, mostly I just have dice everywhere and like bits and pieces all scattered all over the house. So it's mostly just that there is like stuff everywhere. But that is kind of the best example I have of it being kind of in my in my life.
Hey, D&D, social icebreaker.
Pretty much.
Let it be known, everyone. Wear your allegiance with pride, and you too can make unexpected acquaintances. Who knows? Definitely. I've had some bizarre moments of just running into people whilst playing D&D in like a pub or something, and people are like, oh, what's that about? And then just ending up having a conversation for a good hour about our favorite classes and spells to prep. So yeah, it really is just such a social networking tool.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to combine these two questions because I think they sort of nicely link in with each other. So Awesome Jambo, getting thoroughly involved, has another question. I'm going to link it in with Kuradil, another longtime friend of the channel's question. So Awesome Jambo asks, we all know Prosperous had some excellent moments, both solo and personal, but and with other folks like Ashra and Milk. But do they have a favorite moment for their, does Emma have a favorite moment for Emma's own characters and or others they've even just witnessed at the table? And Kuradil asks, where does M see P being in the long term or at the end of the road? So I guess those two kind of synergize quite nicely with each other.
Yeah, interesting. What is my favorite moment? I think the favorite moment I've ever had in D&D was, and apologies, this is in a home game, and it was one that I was DMing, but it just kind of all came together perfectly. So I'm just going to describe it to you and you can tell me if I haven't described it well enough. It was the first home game I'd ever run. We'd been going for about a year. The party had been pursued by this group of hags, one of whom in particular had a connection to one of the party. They were at this bar and they needed to go to another island across the water. And it was dark. And they knew that they needed to go on a barge across the water. And I managed to persuade them to get onto a barge with someone in a cloak, sit in the barge, while I described it being punted across a lake. Punted is where someone, like, pushes a boat with a long stick, just for anyone who's American and thinks it's like throwing things.
Kicking things, but yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Can tell I'm British. I described this barge being punted across a lake, and you could see everyone looking at each other being like, should we say something? And so I was describing the water getting slowly more icy, and like little bits of ice appearing, and this barge being punted to an island. And I could just watch everyone in the room being like, I really ought to say something. Like, this doesn't seem right. Like, it's just getting more and more icy. Oh, and the barge hits the island and the hag turns around and like starts attacking you. And I could just watch all of them being like, and they literally let me punt them into the hag's lair. And like, it wasn't anything clever, but it was just that moment of just watching everyone in the room for about 5 minutes be like, we really should say something. And just everyone being too polite to say anything until the moment when I was like, oh, well, you're here now.
Brilliant.
I've never got away with anything like it again. I only got away with it because it was the first time, but it was class. I enjoyed
it. Brilliant. I love that. That reminds me of a story I read on, it must have been Reddit, where a player was describing sort of being at the table with everybody and so, just saying to someone, oh, do you mind if I just tap you on the shoulder? And they were like, no, that's fine. And so they were getting up and they were doing this speech in character, just going around the table, just gently sort of touching people. And they sit down and they said, I've used that time to cast a touch spell, so you're all in source.
Oh, no.
You all let it happen. That's brilliant. players just like, oh, too polite to say anything in this barge. And that moment of revelation. Well, what did you learn? It's a teachable moment, right?
I think everyone learned now that I'm not to be trusted when there are hags involved. Just, it's no. Not.
No, sausage rolls, trust, hags, less so. Absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of Prosperous, I think what I would like for Prosperous is for P to be kind of travelling around various bits of the Forgotten Realms, helping people out who are in danger. That was always the aim, that Prosperous would be this kind of roaming helper of people. Their entire skill set is based around that, like being the person who stands in the way and can protect other people who are behind them and deal with the thing. whilst protecting other people. So I think that is the, that would be their kind of like goal, is to be like, there is danger over there. I will go there. I'll fix it. I'll save all of you. And then I will move on, which is kind of a, I guess, a lonely life. But I think that is kind of at the moment, that is where they're at. And we'll see if more campaigns change them, or if P meets someone who wants to do the same thing. But at the moment, I think that's where P is at.
I'd be really intrigued, like, if serendipity allowed it. I'd love to know how Aldrin and Prosperous would get on if they met, now that the I was going to say the leopard has changed his spots, but then obviously we know who the leopard is in Bloom, right? it's not Aldrin, but I just thinking that if I was slightly less concerned that Aldrin will probably die in one of these upcoming sessions, because it looks like things are arrayed against us, then I'd be, but yeah, perhaps that'd be an interesting conversation.
Interesting combination of people and personalities, and I think they'd have interesting combining, aligning goals.
Absolutely, and that's part of the fun, is when you bring these disparate characters together, and then find, as players and as a party, what it is that aligns us and what it is that brings us all together to kind of move towards the common goal. That's always a fun thing when there's that moment of resolution. It's like, okay, we now know what we're doing, who we are, and why. Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely. Let's move forward. So should we take another question from chat? Why not? They're coming in thick and fast. So thank you, everybody, for getting involved with the spirit of our live occasion. Troutworthy, once again. Question is, and this is quite a good one, this might be useful for people watching in chat. Do you have any tips for a good session zero?
Yes. So I think it's useful if everyone has at least an idea of what their characters are, or what they want out of the game. I think it's very important that the DM has an idea of what they want to present, so an idea of what direction the campaign is going to move in, because then you can check that those two things align. Which I think is it's useful to use quite a lot of session zero to make sure that everyone's on the same page about what the campaign is intended to be, and whether the characters that you want to play, whether you're going to be able to play those characters in a satisfying manner in this campaign. Because I think if your DM wants to play like a swashbuckling piratical adventure, and you want to play a character who wants to play in like a small town solving crime adventure, I'm not saying those two things can't coexist, but you might need to change a little bit about your character to fit into the adventure, or the DM needs to know that so they can change something about the adventure to fit your character. So it's really important that you have that kind of setting the scene conversation to make sure that those two things align. I think also it can be a really useful place to talk about anything that people don't want to have in the game. So like, if there's anything in particular that people don't want to cover in this world or in this environment, or just in terms of safety. So I think that's a really important conversation. I guess also just in terms of how you're using safety tools. So like, we often go over how we're going to use pause cards, if there's any other safety tools that we use, and talk about them. So I think that's just a really useful conversation to have at the start. And also, I guess just if you don't, if people don't know each other, if there's anybody who's new, or anybody who doesn't know each other quite as well, it's just a really useful place to get to know each other a little bit before you start diving straight into roleplay. Because I find with D&D sometimes it can feel like you really you feel like you've got to know someone really well, and then you can be like, actually, I spent 12 hours talking to a person who is not you. Like, I spent 12 hours talking to a representation that you're putting forward of someone who's not you, and we spent 10 minutes at the start and at the end of each session talking to actually the person who is you. So it can be quite useful to have that kind of just start off like, actually, let's have a chat that's just us as people. Before we dive straight into like, hello, I'm like Celeste the elf and rogue, and like, it can be useful to have that kind of just separation of person and character. I'm trying to think of anything else that I would kind of say is, I think those are the main things that I want to cover. There might be other things that are really campaign specific, but those are kind of the kind of vague general things that I want to go over.
I guess it's kind of a mix between the social which is you know, having the safety tools in place, knowing who you're talking to, understanding what everybody's looking for out of the game, and then the technical, in terms of like how you describe the characters working together, special things that might be affected in terms of the world and how things are working and all that. But I guess the idea is that by the end of a session zero, you ideally want everybody coming to the first session of play confident about what game they're playing, how they're playing it, who they're playing it with, and feeling like they can have fun whilst having that safe environment to play in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the main thing, is that people, by the time you're actually getting into the role play side of things, people feel comfortable with each other as people, so that if anything does happen inside the role play side of things, people feel really comfortable using pause cards or using any of the safety tools you're using, or know what they can and can't do.
Mm, absolutely. And I've certainly say that the first time I think I've seen session zeros used in the way that they currently are, was when I started playing with Roll Together, and when I started playing with Chris in one of their home games. And at that point I did see like the absolute use of it, because you don't want to, you know, at the end of the day, like safety and fun are the two like top points to the whole process.
Absolutely.
And it is one of those things, like you will have moments in game where people do get emotionally invested, and you will have moments in game where there's tension between characters, but not necessarily between people. But you will sometimes see us on our streams here that I've been part of, just checking in with people afterwards, right? And it's just a top up on top of that whole session zero process.
I think it's really vital that people feel able to have that kind of moment to check in. Or sometimes I think if people don't necessarily want to check in with each other, they'll check in with the DM, and then the DM can check in with people. And I think you as the DM need to be able to have that relationship with someone where you can say, actually, hey, that seemed quite intense. Are you all right? Yeah. Or like, you seem a bit withdrawn. Are you okay? And I think you need to be willing as the DM to have those conversations, because at the end of the day, like, the responsibility of the safety at the table is yours, if you're inviting those people. So I think that does fall to you at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely agree with that. Well, should we move from quite a serious question to a slight change of place, a more lighthearted one, if you will? I invite you to consider the following from Awesome Jambo. What is the juiciest piece of lore or the biggest OMG moment for you at the table?
Juiciest piece of lore. The only one I can think of is from the Adventures Wanted game Omen that ran in theatres for a year, which I looked at Chris then, because they know what I'm gonna say. I'm still upset about it.
good, everybody. Everyone good.
I was playing a character who was an Asimar. So Asimars are generally human with a parent who is a god or has some sort of god DNA. Oh, that sounds weird. I made it weird. Sorry, everyone. I made it weird. But like, obviously, if you want to play a different race that has DNA of a god, you can do. It just sounds weird however you say that. Sorry. There is no way to make that better.
Science juice.
That's worse. You made it worse.
That's between you and your subconscious.
And we'd been going through this campaign for a year, and we'd been building up to this battle with the big bad, who was the god of creation. And we'd kind of encountered the children of the god of creation, who looked like my character. We're like, why is the god of creation making people who look like me? Maybe I'm one of the, you know, children of the god of creation. And then we got to this battle with the big bad. I mean, I'm serious. We'd been doing this for a year. There was a lot of tension around this. And it was revealed that not only was I the child of the god of creation, in a sense, like they'd made me, I was also destined to repeat this kind of loop that we were in, where I would become the god of creation and then, you know, inevitably repeat all of their mistakes. And it was just like, you know, awful. We'd been building up to this for a year, and there were five of us at the table, and between the five of us, without speaking about it, between by body language and eye contact, we made the decision to reject this and go on all-out war with the God of creation. And like, that was a perfect moment. It was amazing. In the room, it was amazing. But the moment when that dropped, that was like,
wow.
Can't believe you've done this. I mean, I've done it to players as well. Like, you have to do it as a DM because otherwise the campaign has no tension. And yeah, but it was just like, oh no, this is bad.
That's heavy. This is supposed to be a light-hearted question. And I was like, well, people were taking on a god. It was traumatic. And oh god, okay. Well, but no, that is, in fairness, if you're going to pick a story or an anecdote, it might as well be one that involves gods and wars against them, right? So this one I am hoping will be more lighthearted, okay? And I promise I'm not picking it just because I may or may not have a personal investment in it. But Pixie asks once more, is there a chance for the continuation or a continuation of the Busy Bees one shot?
I have no idea. I genuinely do not know. I will ask Chris after this and maybe find out. But genuinely no idea. Sorry.
All I would say to people is that if it is something that you would like to see, do let us know, right? If you know, we're always happy to receive feedback. It may or may not be acted upon. It's certainly way out of my hands, but I for one really enjoyed just picnicking about with a bunch of sentient animals. God.
It was, that character is so high energy, and I mean, I made that choice. That was a choice that I made, and it's a lot. That's a
you
lot.
Wouldn't want to do that for a 12-parter, would you?
I mean, it'd be a lot after a bad day at work, I tell you that. I have a character like that in one of my home games, and we were playing a couple of weeks ago, and one of my players sending that person, it was about 10 o'clock at night in real time, and obviously I hadn't prepared anything, because the player just randomly sending to them, and I was like, I cannot believe you're doing this to me at 10 o'clock at night. Like, now I have to, you know, suddenly drink a can of Red Bull.
These are the sacrifices that we have to make to keep our performances at the level to which people have become accustomed, right? Yeah, okay, well, I won't be sleeping until 5 a.m., but it's worth it. It's totally worth it. Just lying there like, I'm so tired. Well, I feel like it's been so long since we've rolled the dice that they are probably getting lonely at this point. So
we wouldn't want that.
No, I mean, you know, you got to care for your dice. You want them to roll 20s at those pivotal moments. So here we are. What are we going to get? It is a 15.
They're going up. They're going up.
Yeah, slowly making our way towards a Rebecca as we as I refer to the far the high end of the scale. Poor old George. But a 15 means I ask, and some of this will have been covered, but there may be some more nuance, something to add to it. Is where do you start when making a character? It's the beginning of that process.
I angst about it.
Yes.
For a while.
Can relate. Can absolutely relate, yes.
I asked the DM if I can play a paladin. I'm joking. Sort of. then I think about it. This doesn't portray me very well at all.
No, not at all.
I need to know what the setting is and what the campaign is. Like, I really struggle if I don't know what I'm playing in. So I need to know at least a little bit about it. If someone's like, just make anything you want, I'm like, I don't know what I want. If you just tell me to make anything, I'm going to make a devotion paladin. So yeah. Like, tell me something. Then I'll try and make something that feels like interesting and relevant to the setting. And that I'm interested in playing. Like, for some reason, I never play monks. Like, they just don't do it for me. I love spellcasters. I absolutely adore playing complex classes. Like, I'm playing Shivarith, who's the wizard in Warriors. And
has been announced, yeah.
Soon
to be seen.
It starts on Tuesday. I'm very excited. We have recorded one. It's fantastic. Like, I really... Like, it's been a long time since I played a wizard. And I really enjoy that kind of, like, crunchy... Ooh, I have all these different spells and I can combine them in interesting ways. And especially Shivarith is an evoker. So it's like, I can cast a fireball and I can choose not to hit any of the people in the party. And that's fantastic. I love that. That sounds rather paladin-like, doesn't it? I do the big damage.
I'm saying nothing. I want to stay making your own Roll Together content. I'm saying nothing.
I look at the place and try and think of a concept that would be interesting for that place and something that I really want to play. And then I'll try and fit a species and a class to it. And thanks to Tasha's, you no longer have to be like, well, I need to find a species that has the right stats to fit the class I want to play, which was always the challenge beforehand, because like, I don't want to play something that has the wrong stats, because like, despite everything, I still want to be really good at the game. Like, there is still a game underneath all of this. I don't want to be rolling rolls and be like, well, I add 2 to everything because I chose to play a fighter kobold and it's -1 to everything. Like, that's not fun. Like, that genuinely, that's not fun. And like, unless that's your thing, for me, that's not fun.
Strong agree.
Yeah, but Tasha's now... You can change where the stats go for any of the species you choose. So you can play a super strong kobold, which is awesome. Or you can play like a really, really smart, but not wise Loxodon, which is fantastic, because that means that, you know, it's not like, all elephants are really wise. Like, it doesn't make sense anyway. Yeah, it's much better. I love it. Anyway, so now I'm just like, what I really want to play is something that looks like a cat, because I really like the aesthetic, and they're going to wear a leather jacket, and they're probably going to wear a hat with the ears poking out, and I also want them to be really fast, because that's going to be really cool when I run into combat for the first time, and I also am not going to play a rogue, because I can't play rogues anymore, because I find them too boring. I veer towards rogue. Every time I make a character, I'm like, I could play a rogue, and I'm like, no. I hate playing rogues. I played a rogue as my first character, and I tried again recently, and I found it so tedious, because for me now it's like, oh, every fight, what do? Hide, fire an arrow. Hide, fire an arrow. And I can't do that anymore. I have to be like, what am I going to do? I'm going to choose from my list of 20 spells, and I'm going to cast the one of them that is perfect for this situation.
Absolutely. I mean, having that sort of diversity of approach to things as well, like, it means you can sometimes think laterally around problems as well. It's not like, there is a thing in front of me, I must destroy the thing in front of me in order to progress. But no, I will make the thing in front of me think that it's walking over a bridge and down into a ravine. Yeah, I absolutely see that. No disrespect to people involved playing rogues. If that's your yum, I'm not going to yuck it.
I adored playing a rogue the first time I played them, and it just doesn't work for me anymore. And I'm really sad, because like, I absolutely loved it. So yeah. It was a very sad day.
I mean, I have in mind, it made me think that it's like the campaign is a garden and the character is a seed, and you want to pick a seed that grows well in that soil, right? And then you have this sort of this DM allotment thing.
And what other people are doing as well, because like, if I really want to play a artificer, but someone else also really wants to play an artificer, I'm not going to be like, well, I chose to play an artificer. Yeah. I'm like, well, all right, I've got like 20 other character ideas. I can play one of them instead. Like, I'm not like, you can have parties with 2 of the same thing in them. That's fine. But they have to have really different characterizations and I think different subclasses. And you have to have a conversation about how that's going to work. Like, Trix and Ivy, Persephone, actually, if you look at them in combat, look relatively similar. They have quite similar abilities. They do quite similar things. Like, they're both punching people. But Rebecca and I had a conversation before the campaign started about whether that was going to be okay. And discussed how we were going to work that and how that was going to work and whether we were both all right with that, and made sure that that was fine, because like it can, you don't want to be in a situation where one of you is there going, oh no, we have two characters who do exactly the same thing. Oh no. So it's just all about having that conversation.
So I remember when we were sort of putting all the characters together for Gloomfalls, and like I'd built Aldrin as a stealth, sort of weirdly bizarre stealth cleric. I knew that Evie was putting together a character, and my initial thought process was like, please don't be a rogue, please don't be a rogue, please don't be a rogue. And I was like, no, actually, the way that it came together was completely synergistic, and there's no kind of overlap. And sometimes it's good to have that, because you say it can be complementary, but the way that I agree with you, like T and Percy have found their place in the party, and the way that they found their place as characters, it works really, really nicely, and I've loved the way that that's developed. You've just given me an idea for a character that I've now decided I really, really want to play, but I'm gonna have to wait for the right opportunity, so we'll see when that
I comes
along.
I have an Arakocra Bladesinger in the back of my back pocket that I've had for such a long time.
Ooh, that would be filthy.
He's called Clive. He's a bird of paradise. I've made him on Hero Forge. he would be amazing, but like he needs the right campaign, and it's not happened yet. But
as long as I don't have to DM, I'm all for it. No, I want to have to try and deal with Clive. Well, we are rapidly approaching the end of our hour, so if I do skip over any questions, I apologize. I just want to try and cover as many topics as possible and see if we can get Em's thoughts, your thoughts on as many things as we can. So I'm going to ask you, interestingly, can you, Emma Caridel asks, tell us about a time when you disagreed with another player and how that was resolved, how you managed that? And this can be either as a player or as a DM or both. How was the situation diffused?
Sorry, I'm laughing because Chris and I disagree about almost everything.
No, every time
we play. that's a slight over-exaggeration. When Chris and I first started DMing each other, we would quite often have disagreements about things that happened. And the one that got the most heated, I will reveal to you exclusively here, was when I realized that, I would advise that you not do this because it may frustrate some of your players. But Drow can cast the spell Darkness. If you cast the spell Darkness on a stone and then maybe attach it to your person in some sort of brooch situation that has maybe a lid, you can basically be a mobile sort of dome of darkness that you can turn on and off on your turn as a free action, because object interactions are free, and you can open the lid of the brooch as a free action on your turn and then close it again, so you can shoot things on your turn when you're not in darkness and then close it again, so you're in darkness and things can't see you. I recommend that you do not do this in your games because it's going to irritate people. However, I had a group of drow archers who all did this in one particular session of my game. Chris got very frustrated about it and was very irritated with me afterwards. And we agreed that whilst it was a very clever use of all of the things involved, it perhaps, in combination, was quite a frustrating use of the use of the spell. In more recently, Chris is running Icewind Dale. Rhyme of the Frostmaiden in a home game, and there is a section Rhyme of the Frostmaiden where you go to this hut and like big ice dome thing, and Chris put in a rogue, and there was a rogue who I personally don't feel like DM should run rogues as NPCs, because I think they're very frustrating for players to deal with, because they can hide as a bonus action and then you have to use an action on your turn to perceive them, which means you can't do anything else. So it took a very long time to find this person I got quite frustrated. Similarly, and we had a conversation afterwards where I said, actually, I personally, as a DM, have stopped using rogues as NPCs because I feel like they're very frustrating for players in a way that's not fun. So we have these conversations afterwards, and it's fine. Like, we get frustrated in the moment, but then we talk it out and have these conversations, mostly between ourselves. But it's because we both DM, we both have opinions about what's important to us in play, what we think should happen in games, and we're just both quite opinionated. But yeah, those are two instances I can think of where we've both, in it, from a DM to player context, found something that the other has done where we've gone, actually, I personally don't agree with what you did there, but we have those conversations with each other quite frequently.
Can confirm, Chris and Emma both strong personalities. But I think, like, yeah, if you feel strongly about something, it's because it's important and because the whole experience is important. And it absolutely is possible, and it sounds as though that's been the case, to disagree strongly, but also, you know, find a resolution that's, you know, built upon respect and kind of coming through this sort of thing. And yeah, personally, I would have probably been sort of quietly annoyed at the darkness drow brooch thing. I would acknowledge its brilliance because I think it is, but whilst just grinding my teeth into points. Well, I think let's try and squeeze in one more question. We may run over slightly, but let's do what we can. So this is quite a nice one to finish off on. This one from Picty. Out of all the characters in the streamed campaigns, apart from the ones we can't talk about, which would Emma like to see come together, and would Emma want to play or DM the group?
Yeah.
It's a tough one, I'll grant you. But first thing that comes to mind, instinctual answer.
There's too many to think about.
That's fair. This is a nice cliffhanger to leave on for Talk Together with Emma Part 2.
I think it's, yeah, too many to consider, and too many combinations to think about. Like, when we're doing casting and thinking about groups together, we spend a long time thinking about which characters and which players would work well together. So that's quite a difficult one to answer very quickly. Sorry, I do not have a quick answer to that one. But I would like to come back. I would like to play again as either Prosperous or Trix.
So that answers the question of whether you'd want to DM or play.
I mean, as slight spoiler, I will be DMing the next 12-parter, so starting on June 21st. So that's more information about that coming soon. So you will be seeing me DMing again very shortly. But cannot reveal more information about who will be back
announcements,
in that one.
There will be revelations. These are reasons to like, follow, subscribe on the social media of your choice, because announcements are made there. It's also a good reason to be a member of the D20 Club, because sometimes you get a little sneaky preview.
Absolutely.
I'm just now imagining that if I was ever being DM'd by you and Prosperous and T showed up as hostile NPCs, I would just be like, I surrender.
Oh no, I couldn't bring those two back as NPCs because, like, Prosperous would just kill everybody. It'd be bad.
I honestly feel both those characters could have their own series of books, and I would devour it because I was so into the high fantasy stuff. Well, thank you so much, Emma. It has been an absolute pleasure.
It's been really enjoyable.
Thank you. And that leads me to say thank you to everyone for joining us in chat, being part of the show, lurking if you like. It's all cool. You can get as involved as you like. It's not a problem. If you enjoyed us, and I hope you did, because, I mean, you're here. We stream every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. GMT, and stream D&D games on Mondays and Tuesdays. On Mondays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. GMT, we stream Gloom Falls on Baldur's Gate. And on Tuesdays, what are we streaming, Emma?
It will be the Anvil of Doomathoin. Sorry, I forgot there, because I was thinking about the joke I made to Chris earlier, which is that the thing I can reveal about the new campaign is that it will have a title that is the one that has two letters that are the same as each other. What's that word, David? Chris, what's that word?
Alliteration.
Oh, yeah, alliteration.
Like Windfall and Waterdeep. And I was joking to Chris that I should have called Legends of the Underworld TPK and Theros. Chris was strongly anti.
So if we see more alliterative titles coming through in the future, we will know exactly who has responsibility for that decision.
Pretty much.
This segue aside, all of our shows stream at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG. There is a YouTube link in chat where we have our VODs available, although now having made partner, the VODs will be available longer on Twitch, so you have spoilt for choice. And don't forget, you can also enjoy us as a podcast. We are on, as far as I'm aware, every podcast provider under the sun. If there isn't one, let us know and we'll get that sorted out. Many thanks again to our D20 Club on Patreon, without whom none of the shows we make would be possible. Thanks to all our sponsors and supporters. And this is me, David Shears, signing off and reminding you, stay classy at the table.
Thanks,
see
everyone.
You next time.